More reaction coming up momentarily, but as promised, we are joined right now by a 14-year MLB vet, an all-star, a gold glove winner, a silver slugger, an AL home run champion, an AL comeback player of the year award winner back in 2007. You can watch Carlos Pena as part of MLB Network's World Series coverage. It's airing before and after every game from Globe Life Field. He joins us right now, Carlos Pena. Carlos, good to have you back. How are you?
Hey, man. Really pumped to be joining you this afternoon. So thanks for having me.
It's great to have you, and I'm pumped to have you, too. So going into the series, you would compare this Rays team to the team in 2008 that you were a part of. Can you take me back to 08 first? What made that team so special?
Well, I think we have to go immediately to the history of the franchise at that time, you know, and their young history, really. It was a 10-year losing story. I mean, you think about the fact that first 10 years in the organization, they had never won 60 games. 60! And 2007, that was actually my best year as far as individual stats are concerned. Just a year after, we become what they called us the Beast of the East and arguably the best team in the American League in just a year of a turnaround. I think that's what makes the story so remarkable. And dethroning just these perennial teams that had just continually been to the World Series and the postseason in the Yankees and the Red Sox. So that's what I think the biggest story of it all was, the fact that we went to the World Series after never, ever in the history of the franchise winning 60 games. That is remarkable.
It is. Carlos Pena joining us. That really was remarkable. And that 08 team had established MLB stars, guys like you, Cliff Floyd, Carl Crawford. And that's before we get into the crazy young talent that you guys had on that roster as well. What about this 2020 team? Do they have as many guys who are as established as stars as that group did?
Yeah, not at all. That's, I think, what makes this team very unique and peculiar is the fact that you could argue back in 2007 and going on 2008 that, okay, we didn't have these superstar, you know, high-priced talent, but we had quite a few established big leaguers, you know, in myself, Cliff Floyd, Carl Crawford, pretty good players. And, you know, you could say, even argue that we were stars in some regard. But this ball club right here is just a bunch of good, solid players. It's not to take away from any of them. But in reality, you don't have that one that stands out and says, oh, that's a bona fide superstar in the big leagues. You cannot find one in that ball club that you could say that about. And that's what makes this team really interesting. But also, I believe that that is precisely why they are so dangerous. It's because they're used to playing that type of baseball where everyone has to contribute and nothing falls on any particular player fully. It's the sum of all parts that makes this ball club very dangerous.
We are talking to Carlos Pena. All right, so Carlos, things did not go so well for the Rays in game one. Clayton Kershaw got through that first inning that was kind of rough, and then he settled in, and then he was rolling. Then the Dodger hitters did their damage. So what do you make of how Tampa Bay played in game one and then how they responded in game two?
You know, game one was sloppy. I thought that Glasnow was all over the place with the placement of his fastball. I thought it was too random the way he was utilizing speed. When, if you ask me, I would have had him throw the fastball pretty much precisely up and in and pound these Dodgers hitters in with the fastball and elevated, not just in, elevated. That would have made his off-speed pitches a lot more effective. That didn't happen. And I thought they came out flat. The bats were not on cue. And look, I'm going to give Kershaw quite a lot of credit. I mean, there was a tough first inning, but then he made the adjustment. I thought he was flying open early on in the game, and then he was able to close off and utilize that front shoulder almost as a hinge. And you saw the bite and the slider come back. The fastball location was where a little bit better. And obviously that just carried the Dodgers to a win. The offense was locked in for the Dodgers as well. The good thing was that the Rays came back immediately. You know, I thought last night was a must win for the Rays. If the Rays would have found themselves two games behind the Dodgers at this point, you could have said it was pretty much a wrap, in my opinion. So for the Rays to be able to punch back and kind of say, hey, back off of me, I'm not going to be cornered, you know, it's so important. And now they're sitting looking forward to a best-of-five series with pretty much the entire setup as far as the pitching is concerned. You know, with this rest day here, Cash has a lot of options. So this is best case scenario for the Rays after the way the game one went.
See, what, I'm glad you said that. I could not agree with you more.
They're sitting well right now.
That was a must-win game. Excuse me, Carlos. I'm glad you said it, because when you've got Blake Snell on the mound and the Dodgers are going with Tony Gonsolin and fought by a bunch of relievers and they've lost game one, they had to win that game. To me, that definitely was a must-win game. What was your reaction when Brandon Lau went deep in the first inning? And then how big of a moment was that for the Rays, not just in the game but in the entire series?
Jim, that's absolutely huge, because Brandon, it's one of those pillars in that lineup, and he had not been performing. You know, let's just be quite honest. He's been struggling during the postseason. And a lot of times, you know, when we look at hitters, we start thinking, oh, what's wrong with his swing? Well, let me tell you that usually what we're looking at is symptoms. You know, when we see swings break down, it's not because the swing itself is wrong. It's because the timing is wrong. So we got to go to the root of the problem. And I thought he made a great adjustment yesterday at getting ready earlier. He's been late on fastballs, fouling pitches off, even though you're like, wow, I was right on that fastball, I just missed it. No, you were late. You were a few degrees late, a few clicks late. And I thought he did a better job of getting ready early enough to catch up to those fastballs. Yes, they were out over the plate, so, you know, pitchers did not locate the way they should have, but the swing was so crisp and smooth and natural. And look, let's talk about what it does to the ball club to see their best hitter, you know, arguably, perform. I mean, it is absolute a huge boost for the ball club, for the offense, and now they're sitting with confidence that they can go forward and really compete with this very potent lineup that the Dodgers have.
Carlos Pena is joining us. All right, so what about Randy Rosarena? When you watch him play and the way he's broken out this postseason, I mean, like, Carlos, the ball just explodes off this guy's bat. As one hitter watching another, what sticks out to you the most in terms of how he's able to barrel up the ball consistently?
Jim, I'm going to dive in a little bit deeper, you know, as far as hitting is concerned. I think sometimes we look at, you know, like, oh, hand-and-eye coordination, you know. And yes, we do need hand-eye coordination to be great hitters in the big league level. But I'm not concerned about hitters in the big leagues actually intersecting the pitch line. You know, that's always done. The key is to actually do it at the right time. That's why hitters, when they have that loopy swing, it's very difficult to make contact, because if you're not on time, you're swinging and missing. All right? Well, Randy Rosarena is one of these guys that have a very, very flat swing. So he's got two things going for himself. He is on the pitch line for a very, very, very long time, more than most. So forget about swinging up. I don't believe in that launch angle thing. If you are thinking about it in terms of swinging up, launch angle happens after you hit the baseball, all right? And Rosarena gets on the pitch line immediately. So that gives him a lot of margin for error. Now, if you add to that very good timing, then the production just comes. It is just exactly what happens when you have that perfect formula. And Randy Rosarena has been doing precisely that. On the path, online with the pitch, and on time. That is the perfect formula for success and as an offensive player and as a hitter.
I'm glad you went deep on that. Carlos Pena joining us. All right, so Carlos, Tampa Bay is famous also in the way they handle their bullpen, and they're not afraid to shake up their lineup either. In the past, a lot of relievers would prefer to have a specific role, either as a setup man or a specialist or a closer. The Rays, of course, do not take that approach. How has Kevin Cash and the rest of the organization gotten everybody to buy in and be prepared to deliver no matter what role they're given?
And I'm so glad you pointed that out, because I think traditionally we've seen guys who, hey, man, I want to make sure I get to the park and I'm hitting fourth. You know, I'm cleanup. I don't even look at the lineup. I know where I'm hitting. That used to be the narrative. And then people and players, you know, used to always say that that's what they would prefer. But here we are in a totally different style of play. I think we can say that about both ball clubs. You mentioned the different lineups, 59 different lineups for the Rays during the regular season, 57 for the Dodgers. They have the same style of play, even though the money they spend is totally different. I mean, it's lopsided in that regard. But Cash has done a great job of communicating to players the importance of everyone just contributing. And it's remarkable to me, so important to me, to see how everyone has bought in. In essence, if you are a pitcher for the Tampa Bay Rays, you are not designed any specific role. Your job is to put out fires or to prevent the house from getting on fire. All right, that is your role. It is very ambiguous, which means that at any moment, you could be called upon to put out a fire or preventing the house from getting on fire. That is the mentality of the entire pitching staff. And if you are a hitter, you're there to do damage. You're there to go on a search and destroy mission. Where? You know, where, what, who, what is the target? It doesn't matter to you. You're ready to be deployed. And if I'm allowed, you know, with respect, you know, to talk in military terms, I'm just ready to be deployed whenever. I don't know what my job is. I'm looking for my target, and I'm going to destroy it. And that's your job as a hitter, regardless whether you're hitting leadoff, cleanup, or last. It does not matter.
I love that analogy always, man. Targets. Targets. Just knock down your targets. Find your target. Lock in on the target. Carlos, what if you're an opposing hitter? How much does your approach to the game change when you know you're going to see a different pitcher every single time you step to the plate?
Well, it should change, right? It should change, Jim. But unfortunately, I would say, as I look at hitters, they're behind in that sense because they are not preparing to hunt the pitcher. So, in other words, you can go in an 162 game season and pretty much set parameters, you know, as far as variables are concerned. I'm going to get deep again into hitting, but and this is the thing. I've had experience, so I'm talking about the application, but also now that I'm retired and just solely studying this, I also have the theory and the science behind it to match what I'm talking about. If you just set parameters and basically you say, I'm just going to look away, react in, and that's your approach during the World Series, a short series, you know, you may never get that pitch within the parameters that you've set. In the 162 game season, you will get some pitches in that area enough to put up pretty decent numbers. But in a short series, you better get out there and hunt the pitcher that's on the mound. How? You have to know what they throw. You have to know what pitch they go to. And you have to sit on these pitches. And not only that, be ready for the speed of those pitches so that your timing is on par for those. That's how you defeat, you know, these really tough pitchers on both sides, really. I mean, because both teams have great, great pitching. You can't just go out there and default guys, you know, especially in the postseason and these short series. You have to have a plan and a strategy. And it better change. You have to sit on pitches. You cannot try to hit everything, cover the whole entire strike zone. You want to be the master of one pitch instead of being, you'll cover everything, which you will not be able to do. All right, so it's very key to come up with a very specific strategy.
All right, so now, Carlos, you just said that in retirement now you have a chance that even though you've had the experience and the application, you can study this more. But it seems to me you're still doing some hunting, a different kind of hunting. For instance, you still killed for MLB Network, but I want to ask you about some of the work you did in the ALCS. You were on that demo field. You're charging ground balls. You're showing how first baseman should be stretching. You're doing it all in a suit with the suit jacket buttoned up, and you're making it look really smooth. Almost anybody else would have taken off their jacket, maybe blown out the pants or the jacket buttons trying to run and stretch. Man, exactly how did you do all that?
Hilarious. You know, I always worried about splitting the suit, you know, because I try to wear the fitted, nice fitted suits. You know what I'm talking about, Jim?
Oh, I do.
Like, you know, the Italian nice fitted suit. But, man, I just think it's so important. I'm very passionate about taking the fans into the game and explaining what's truly happening. And Jim, I hate cliches, man. I just hate giving the fans cliches. I want to make sure that I bring substance. So if that means that I have to go ahead and field ground balls with my suit or take some swings with my suit, that's precisely what I'm going to do.
No, and I love that. And you want to make sure that the suit looks good and feels good. So, Carlos, how have you approached it in retirement in terms of working out, maintaining good physical conditioning, nutrition? Did you kind of take the foot off the gas, or do you still live that lifestyle? Because it looks like you do.
Jim, my wife jokes with me all the time. It's like, you're working out harder than you did when you played.
Right.
And that is true to an extent, because when I played, I had to be a little bit more careful because injury was always something that we were trying to prevent. Now I can go a little bit more aggressive. So I'm lifting heavier weight than I ever have lifted. You know, I'm hitting max, you know, maxing out on the bench press, for example. We never bench press when we played. It was just one of those things that we try to stay away from because of the shoulder health and all that. So I'm going harder than ever before. I'm glad you noticed, and that actually motivates me to keep on doing it.
So, Carlos, yeah, exactly. I get that. So let me ask you this then. Why? I mean, do you love it, or do you love what it does for you? Why are you going as hard as you are right now?
Man, I think I missed the competition. And now the competition that is, you know, I can't do it on the field, I do it against myself. It's basically saying, hey, what can you conquer next? You know, what is it? What kind of move can you conquer next? How much weight can you push next? You know, how many pull-ups can you do? And I'm like, well, you wouldn't be able to do that when you were 25, and now at 42, you're doing it? Okay, that's impressive. So I feel like it's a constant trying to push myself to the limit. I absolutely love it. You know, so I love sports. I love fitness and all that. And I think I'm you know, self-disciplined. There's a quote. Someone asked me, like, can you give me a quote? Can you give me a quote to put in the gym, the gym that I go to here on the club next door? And the quote was, success is built upon self-discipline. So self-discipline to me has always been key to anything I do. Ever since I was young, it was crazy. I had that in my mind. I think it was still by, you know, by my parents. Instilled in me by my parents, and I still live by that motto. So if I ever want to reach new heights, I have to be self-disciplined. So that's why I work out so hard still, Jim.
I absolutely love it. I love the message. Carlos Pena, my guest. Carlos, one last thought, and I've kept you longer than I do any other guest, but I so appreciate the energy and the insight both. The Dodgers have been so good at extending at bats and even extending innings. With all the runs they've scored with two outs, that is, what kind of a psychological toll does that take on the opposing team when they're extending at bats and extending innings?
Oh, it's most definitely a factor. As a matter of fact, I'm going to even go back a little bit. One of my concerns with the Rays was the fact that they had a very strenuous, emotionally strenuous series with the Astros. You know, after being three games up and then having to almost, you know, lost the lead and pretty much almost lost the World Series, and they had to come out, the ALCS, and had to come out and win that game seven, that takes a toll on you. So I was worried about them coming out flat. I thought they came out flat, game one in the World Series. The same token, when you have hitters just put up a fight every single AB, it takes so much out of you. It drains you. So there's a lot to be said about the resilience of this Dodger lineup, that pitchers cannot take at-bats off. And this is the thing, Jim. They have to be very economical and frugal with their pitch counts. So you can't have, you know, you can't go 3-2 on every single batter. That's going to totally deplete your arsenal there in the bullpen and in your arms. So you have to be efficient with the way you pitch and the sequencing of your pitches. So that's something to watch out for here as we go forward. Deeper into the World Series.
Could not love that conversation any more than I do. He's a 14-year MLB vet, an all-star, a Gold Glove winner, a Silver Slugger, an AL Home Run Champion, an AL Comeback Player of the Year Award winner as well. And you can watch Carlos Pena as part of MLB Network's World Series coverage, which is airing before and after every game from Globe Life Field. Carlos, that was awesome. Appreciate you so much. Thank you for doing that.
Jim, it's always a pleasure. Let's make sure we do it again before the World Series is over.
I would love to. I'll take you up on that for sure, Carlos. All right, my man, be good. Let's do it again before the end of the World Series. I could do that conversation after every single game. It's so good. It's always an amazing thing and a great thing when a guest comes on, and the first thing that guest says is, I'm pumped to be here. And they mean it. That didn't surprise me at all. Knowing him and his passion and his energy and his insight, I knew that to be true, but then to show up like that, that is so good. What a great conversation that was. All right, so when we come back,